Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, that nook and cranny podcast on the Nerd Party Network that looks at the wonderful English muffin that is the Star Wars galaxy. We have a very special episode for you this week. We have a returning guest that I am so pleased to have live and in person. But before I get to that guest, just a reminder that go to thenerdparty.com/contact and you can go ahead and reach out to the show by finding it there. Just look up Aggressive Negotiations. You can find all of the other shows on the Nerd Party when you go to thenerdparty.com. You can, of course, reach out to us on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. That's the official show Twitter handle. And you can reach out to the network at Join Nerd Party on Twitter and on Facebook, facebook.com/thenerdparty. And please, if you use the network accounts, just use the hashtag Aggressive Negotiations to let us know that you'd like to talk to us. So, all of that said, I am pleased to welcome back a very special guest that we've had on Aggressive Negotiations before, Saber Goddess. How are you, Saber Goddess?
I'm doing good.
You're doing good. I'm yes. Glad to hear that you're doing well. So,
I'm doing well.
Yes. I am... pleased to have you on, because the last time we had you on, you had read the novelization for The Force Awakens.
Yep.
And we talked about the differences and what you liked about the movie and what you liked about the book. And we never had you on for Rogue One.
No.
So before we get into talking about The Last Jedi, which is the reason that you're here, is to give us your insight as a Star Wars fan on The Last Jedi and the things you liked and or maybe didn't like, what have you. What was your take on Rogue One? Just so people can get a sense. We know that you really liked The Force Awakens. You really liked Rey. You really liked what happened there. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on Rogue One since it was the movie we got between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi?
Well, I mean, I thought it was okay. I don't really remember it, but there were some parts I liked, some parts I didn't like. But I did like that scene where Darth Vader comes in the end and he starts killing everybody.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was the third time I saw it, I took you to go see it again. And you were sort of disconnected from the movie as a whole, just kind of like you're just kind of there. And then when Darth Vader came in, like your father, you sat up and you giggled a little bit and you said, yeah. And that I think we can both agree that's sort of a highlight scene of the entire film.
Yeah.
For sure. So, fast forward to this December, and The Last Jedi comes out. Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. We finally find out what Luke Skywalker has been up to for these missing 30 years. Well, some of those missing 30 years.
Some.
So, give me your first impressions. What did you think about The Force Awakens, about The Last Jedi? I know you saw it twice in the movie theater because you were with me the second time you saw it. It was my second time seeing it. What was your reaction? Did you like it? Did you dislike it?
The first time I saw it, I mean, it's basically like close reading in school. I mean, the first time you read it just to read it, and then the second time around you look for the stuff you like and you don't like. The first time, my initial reaction was I really liked it. It was one of my favorite Star Wars movies, because one of the reasons because of Porgs, and it also had a little bit of humor, and it was just a really good movie.
Okay, and so you had the same impression after the second time that you saw it? Was there anything that you missed the first time that you caught the second time that you liked more or that you disliked more?
I mean, I don't really think the part where she goes into the cave is necessary, where she's like in the mirror and then she touches the mirror and there's no one there but it herself. I mean, I don't really get why that's there.
Well, that's certainly purposely there. You know, you're supposed to leave with the question of what did that vision mean for her? But I can understand what you're saying is that it didn't feel connected to the rest of everything else, that it felt out of place because it was so different.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that scene in the horror movie where, like, you know what they're like about to do, but you don't know. And I felt it was kind of like a little out of place for the whole Star Wars thing.
Now, didn't you see a similarity between that and when Luke was in the cave in The Empire Strikes Back, when he went into the tree and he had the visionary fight with Darth Vader and saw his own face in the mask? Mm-hmm. You didn't see them as similar?
Well, now I do, because I had forgotten about that until you just mentioned it here.
Okay.
So
okay.
I do see a connection now.
Okay. If somebody were to ask you, because you mentioned close reading, if you were to have your teacher say to you, what did that scene try to say about Rey? What would you have said?
I would have said she might be a lot like Luke when he was younger. And I think I would have said they were kind of in the same place right then.
Okay. So sort of in the same place in their journey towards becoming a hero.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that scene takes place and immediately goes right over to her talking with a vision of Kylo Ren.
Yes, it does.
Well, and so do you think they were trying to say anything about that?
Well, I think they were also trying to say that Kylo Ren might have been a little bit like Rey and Luke too, because, I mean, he did train with Luke, so he might still have a piece of Luke in him.
Now, that's a very interesting read. Speaking of him training with Luke, of course, we find out, we see three different perspectives on mm-hmm. what happened and why Ben Solo became Kylo Ren. And we see that Luke had a moment where he thought about killing Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, in his sleep.
And he didn't, like, know why he thought about it. It was just, like, a passing reaction, and he was, like, upset with himself. And anybody would be upset with themselves if they just almost killed somebody. Because, I mean, who does that?
Right. But would you say that is even in character for Luke to have that moment where he considers killing his own nephew? Because he sees a potential dark future?
I really don't think that Luke would have done that. I think that might have been more of an Anakin turning kind of thing.
So you would say that that's a little bit of the Anakin Skywalker in Luke coming forth?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, that's interesting, because one of the things they talk about, of course, is that Luke has given up on Ben. And even at the end of the movie, he's given up on Ben and doesn't think he can be redeemed. Do you think that that's in keeping with Luke, considering the fact that he thought that even at the end, Darth Vader could be redeemed?
I really don't think that connects to Luke either. I mean, because he saw the good in Anakin, and, I mean, Kylo Ren was sort of like Anakin, and I doubt Luke would have really done that in my perspective.
But given the fact that he did, do you think that Kylo's reaction is right or appropriate? Do you think that Kylo should have given Luke a chance to explain himself?
Yeah, I really think he should have done that. I mean, it's kind of like where that moment where you're just so mad that you won't let anybody talk to you, and you just want to do, like, get revenge.
But we see that Kylo Ren has conflict in his heart. He has a hard time initially killing Han. He isn't able to pull the trigger to kill Leia. Why don't you think Luke reached out to him and tried to explain himself after that moment? I mean, obviously you have Ben destroys the Jedi Temple. Ben goes off, becomes Kylo Ren. Do you get any sense that Luke tried to reach out to him and explain himself to him?
Well, I think that Luke was kind of scared to talk to him because, I mean, he almost killed him, and I would be scared to talk to somebody too, because, I mean, you almost killed them, and you think they might kill you, and so, like, he was very conflicted, and sometimes you just want to stay away from that type of person, but you realize later that that's kind of a mistake and you should have talked to them.
So how long in your mind do you think that Luke was in hiding? How long do you think he had been gone? Because they never say specifically how long he's been gone. How long do you think he's been on that island on, and we know from outside materials?
I think he was like there a pretty long time, because so long that he sort of became a legend and nobody knew where he was.
Now
you have to be gone a pretty long time for like somebody to be like, where did they go? What happened to them?
Right, for people to forget who you were in reality and those sorts of things. Well, that's a very interesting read. And the thing is, I don't want to get bogged down just with Luke, because I know that from The Force Awakens, you loved Rey. You thought Rey was great. Do you think that Rey got better in this movie, or do you like Rey as much, or was Rey as interesting and as exciting?
She was very interesting, because it takes a lot of guts for her to be like, to go down there and know that she might not be coming back, just to talk to a person and trying to make them see that they still have some good left in them and they can turn back.
You mean when she goes to Kylo Ren?
Yeah.
So you think that when she goes down there, it's a truly brave act for her, because The Last Jedi occurs pretty much right after The Force Awakens. So she's already pretty far along in her journey. I mean, do you think that Rey is, do you think that her importance in this is more important than Luke was? Do you think that she got to her point where she's trying to turn the villain back to the light? Do you think that her journey is too fast or the right speed?
I think it would be actually the right speed for Rey, because she got off Jakku like pretty suddenly and everything happened really suddenly, and sometimes that happens. And I mean, it felt the right speed because things were happening pretty fast in Rey's life.
So let me ask you though, why, in your opinion, does Rey care about turning Kylo Ren? If the only time that she's interacted with him up to this point is she saw him kill Han Solo, who she'd been getting close with, and then she has a lightsaber fight with him where she was going to kill him, except for the fact that Starkiller Base was tearing itself apart. So why do you think that Rey has any vested interest in turning Kylo at this point? I mean, considering she just met him.
I really think that after they kept like bridging their minds, she kind of felt connected, but I don't think she felt that connected after she found out that Emperor Snoke had been bridging their minds by himself.
So that's something that I want to ask you about, is you find out that Snoke has been bridging their minds, and do you think that means that Snoke has been, do you think that he is more powerful than Luke? Do you think that he's more powerful than the Emperor?
Well, I think it was kind of like strange that he was like just getting to the exciting part. It was just getting to the exciting part where he's growing pretty powerful. It's basically another Darth Vader and the Emperor, but he gets, in my opinion, he might have been, I think he was killed too fast. I think maybe in the next movie they could have had more excitement with him if they didn't kill him.
Well, of course, there's always the possibility that they could bring him back. You know, death isn't necessarily permanent in a science fiction or fantasy movie. He could always, because there's speculation, and let me see what you would think of this. There's speculation that Snoke was actually not really there, that he was a projection. I don't agree with it, well, because you see his corpse laying there and would be no...
Neither do I, because that doesn't really seem right, because, I mean, they just killed him and it's kind of weird that they would do that, because, I mean, you saw him get killed and that wouldn't make sense.
Do you think it would remove sort of the importance of Kylo killing him if he wasn't really dead.
Yeah, because, like, that would... Although, that would kind of... I could see a point because now Kylo Ren is the Emperor, and then Snoke might have, like... Snoke might have, like, come back, and, like, then they could have, like, fight over who gets to be the Emperor, and then, well, maybe they could have a different outcome. Like, instead of one of them dying, it could have a different outcome.
Would you want to see Snoke come back? Do you want him to come back?
Well, I mean, it depends on how they play it. Like, if they do it well, then I think people will like it. It's kind of a gamble with that, because if they did it the wrong way, then people wouldn't like it. But if they did it the right way, then it would work out really well.
What do you think the right way could be? Because I have an idea of what the right way could be. What do you think the right way could be?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe it could start another plot. Like, maybe Kylo Ren, it could be another chance for him to turn good, because he might join the Emperor and like join him, and they might rule side by side, and he might find a way to like kick him off the throne. I don't know.
Well, I know, and the thing is, I know that people are noticing you called him Emperor Snoke, but his proper title is Supreme Leader Snoke, but you figure that's pretty much the same thing.
I mean, he's basically Darth Sidious.
He's
got the face.
Doesn't he seem more powerful than Darth Sidious? Because, I mean, he seems able to sort of throw people around pretty easily, like ragdolls. Like, he literally throws Rey around with the Force like nothing. And even through hologram, he actually throws, if you remember in the beginning, he throws General Hux on the floor and drags him across and spins him around.
Darth Vader is supposed to be the same way. Like, if you displease him, like, a system away or something, then he can do the thing. But... like, I think it's kind of mixing Darth Vader and Emperor Sidious.
Okay. Well, Sidious, okay.
I mean.
We've talked about, you know, we've talked about the Jedi, and we've talked about Luke at this point. We've talked about Rey. We've talked about Kylo. But there's a whole other half of the movie that we're not talking about. And so I wanted to ask you now about that plot line involving the Resistance running away from the First Order. What did you think of that? Did you like that as much the second time that you saw it?
Well, I really didn't like it the second time. Well, I liked, the girl in the purple dress. What's her name?
Vice Admiral Haldo?
Yeah, her. I think she does represent the Resistance in Sacrifice. But I really don't think that the Resistance should run away, because that doesn't really seem like them, because in the past they've always been fighting and they normally win. It doesn't make sense that they were chased out.
Does it make sense, though? I mean, maybe something, and let me try this idea out with you. I mean, everybody has to run away. I mean, the Rebels run away from Hoth at the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back. And so, you know, people sometimes run away to fight another day, and that's fine. But do you think that maybe what you're talking about is the way the Resistance runs away, keeping everybody together and running in one direction? Maybe what they should have done is split up and everybody go in different directions?
Well, I mean, it's that gamble thing again. Like, I think they gambled with it and they didn't quite do it right.
Well, speaking of gambling, of course, you have Finn and Rose go off to that gambling planet. What did you think of the gambling planet? Canto Bight, as we know that it's called.
Well, I think that was a pretty good part, because that kind of is like a part of this world. In the past, people would do that, and like it's kind of... see, showing that sometimes you have to look deeper than, like, just the surface, and I liked that they, like, tore it up and they made them hurt, like, because It also is kind of a big nature thing because a lot of people like animals, and I'm one of them, and like they were helping those, and I think it kind of resembled the resistance a lot, and I don't like the part where they find the person they're not supposed to find, and then he turns against them because.
You're talking about the fact that they went to Canto Bite to make contact with somebody and they don't make contact with that person and wind up making contact with somebody who can do the same thing chance.
And then he doesn't do it.
Right.
So, wow.
So that actually, because of the Canto Bite thing, brings us back around to them returning, from Canto Bite and having the guy turn on them. You wind up with Captain Phasma suddenly showing up for one scene. What did you think of Captain Phasma coming back?
Well, I think a lot of people liked Captain Phasma, so I think they were doing that just because a lot of people liked it and they wanted to have that appearance because it would make more people go to the movies. And I also liked that night Captain Phasma, but I mean, the part doesn't really like speak to the theme of the movie. So I think they just did that to sell more tickets.
Oh, so you don't think that it really had a good story purpose?
No.
Okay.
Other than, like, the whole Star Wars battle thing, because Star Wars always has, like, battles and stuff.
Well, after that part, though, when they, you know, they all get back to, you know, and they're running away to Crait, where they have the, you know, the walkers and everything like that. I mean, I remember the first time I saw it, I figured the movie was pretty much over when the First Order fleet got blown up and, you know, Supreme Leader Snoke was dead and everything. Like, did it feel like it took too long to get to the end after that?
I think they could have cut the whole part about Captain Phasma and gone straight to the planet with the crystal dogs, because that was a really good part, I think. But there were some other parts that they could have cut out to make it shorter, but keep that part, because I think they should have kept that part, but maybe they could have taken out other parts.
So before we move on to Crait and sort of, you know, and talk about the ending and what you liked about that, with Leia, she, of course, demonstrates some pretty, you know, a pretty amazing power where she's able to bring herself essentially back to life, even though she's been blown out into deep space, and fly back to the resistance ship. And did that part take you by surprise? Did you like it? Did you dislike it? How did you feel about that?
I have kind of mixed feelings. I mean, she never had that power, so I don't think that makes that much sense, because she was obviously knocked out and you cannot breathe in space, and she had to be at least knocked out for about 20 minutes. So how do you hold your breath that long? The longest, like, I can hold my breath is like 30 seconds.
Well, I mean, discounting the time, I mean, all the way back to Return of the Jedi, Luke actually says to Leia, you have that power too, when he tells her about her lineage, that she is also Darth Vader's child. And so it makes sense for her to have some power, but I mean, did it just catch you off guard? Do you think that it was a pretty big leap, considering she never had training? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Or? Yeah, because, like, obviously she had the Force before. Wouldn't she have become a Jedi too?
Well, that's always been one of the big questions among fans, is they never seem to pursue Leia getting training as a Jedi and those sorts of things. But all that aside, do you think the movie would have been better if they had just, you know, had her get hurt on the bridge and just had her knocked out that way?
Yeah, but that also stirs another question of why, like, before, like, all the girl Jedis that I have seen in the movie have not been human. I have never seen a human, well, all the girl Jedis, like, you see a bunch of the ones with the brain, kind of thing.
Well, like Ahsoka has, she's a Togruta and she has the tails, and you have you know, have Aayla Secura, who has blue skin, and she has the Leku because she's a Twi'lek. Whether or not we've ever seen a human female Jedi, I think probably in Attack of the Clones we did in the group of Jedi. I'm pretty sure we would have seen a girl human Jedi there. But you're talking about in terms of, you know, an appreciable amount of screen time. There doesn't seem to have been just a human female Jedi before Rey and Leia.
Now, there are a bunch of comic Star Wars books that have girl Jedis in them, but I have never seen one in a movie, really.
Well, I mean...
like human girl Jedis.
Human girl Jedis, right.
Because Ahsoka is not human. A lot of... Well, I just don't remember seeing one. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, when I'm talking about the group scenes in, you know, in Attack of the Clones, it's, you know, a field full of Jedi, you know, it's a big arena full of Jedi, and it's not like they're spending a lot of time zeroed in on anybody. But all of that, okay, you know, we've gone through the Resistance, we've gone through the Luke plot line, which is, you know, sort of the meat of it. Now we come to Krait. What is it that you liked about Krait? What made it work for you?
Well, I liked it, the salt, because it kind of, the white kind of symbolized the Resistance, and the red might have been the First Order, and they were dragging all the salt trails, and was kind of, it kind of felt like a symbol of war, basically.
A symbol of war. That's interesting. So you're saying that the white of the salt represented the purity of the Resistance, mm-hmm. and the red that they kicked up represented the anger and the disturbance of the First Order to the galaxy. Now, they have the Porgs show up again in this sequence on the Falcon, and mm-hmm. did you think it was funny? Did you think it was too much to have the Porgs flopping around in the Millennium Falcon while they were flying?
I think it was funny because the little Porg had the headset on and it was like shouting a war cry. And I also like the part where they had the Porgs like doing stuff, and like one Porg was wearing Chewie gear and he was just like, oh, come on.
But I mean, during that specific sequence where they're flying through the canyon, getting the fighters to follow them, and the Porg flops on the window and that sort of thing. Did you think it enhanced that part, or do you think it took away from that part?
I think it enhanced that part because it, I mean, if you like funny, then that gave the battle scene a part of that. So I think it like was a wider reach, basically.
Now, with that battle, there is something pretty contentious among a lot of people who saw the movie, where Finn is about to drive into the cannon to blow it up and sacrifice himself for everybody. And then Rose comes along and she rams his ship and stops him from doing it. Did you like that part? Did it work for you? Because then she says, oh, she basically says that she loves him and gives him a kiss and passes out. Did you like the way they did that?
Well, I mean, I think they did that because they wanted to keep Finn around for the next movie. And I mean, I think they were also trying to have that sacrifice yourself thing, but Luke was already doing that, so maybe they thought it was overkill or something.
So you think it was more of a decision because that they didn't want to kill off Finn, that they wanted to save him for the next movie. Well, then wouldn't there be a question of why put him in that situation at all? Wouldn't it have been better not to have him in the situation where you have to get him out of it?
Well, I think that because they wanted some of that sacrifice stuff where you think where they are going to sacrifice themselves and it's sort of like intent, but like, it doesn't really matter about the action. Like, I think that's what they were trying to say, maybe. It doesn't matter about the action. It sort of matters about intent, like what you intend to do.
Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. I see what you're saying with that. But here's my last question to you. And I do thank you, Saber Goddess, for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to appear on the show. I know that people have always been very happy with your appearance previously, And so hopefully we can have you on again sooner than a year later next
hopefully.
Time. So
but
here,
that would not make it as special as my appearance if I went on regularly. So
that's true. Maybe we'll
see me next time.
Maybe we'll just have you come on board after the Solo movie comes out this summer. And you can talk about your thoughts about the Solo movie, because you know I'm probably going to drag you to that one, right?
Basically, every Star Wars movie, I am going to talk about it.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good promise. I think people will look forward to that. So that being said, with Episode 8 now wrapped up, what do you hope to see in Episode 9? Do you have anything that you hope that they do?
I think that maybe they were saving the meaning of the porgs for the next thing. Because like you said earlier, the porgs are kind of just there.
Well, that was a discussion we had before we started recording.
And I think they might introduce a purpose for them. Like maybe they're a distraction or something.
So maybe the porgs get you hope the porgs come back in Episode 9 and then it's revealed that they're not just there, but they have a meaning and a purpose that elevates them in terms of the story.
Because normally in Star Wars, they have, the nature normally has a purpose, unless they show it for one scene. If they kept showing it, I think that's to maybe let you know that they're going to be there next time.
Okay. All right. Well, again, I appreciate you coming on and spending time with me. I always love spending time with you. You know that. And I appreciate you sharing your voice and your thoughts with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'll just go ahead and remind everybody that you're too young to be on social media or interact with anybody. But if you want to drop a line and pass along a note to Saber Goddess, I will gladly relay it for you. You can find me online as at Kessel Junkie.
You will make sure I answer it.
I will make sure. I will be your supreme leader, Snoke, and I will connect you with other people and communicate on your behalf. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is the typical time where I'll say, you can find me here on the Nerd Party on Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. You can find me regularly here on Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing. And you can find me over on Trek FM on Stage 9 with Mike Schindler. And you can find me with my pal Craig Sorrell on Words with Nerds. All great shows. Then there are great shows here on the Nerd Party. And be sure to check out Matt on Owl Post, which is a Harry Potter podcast. Check him out on 602 Club on Trek FM Network. And check him out on Cinema Stories, which is a faith-based podcast that he does with his friend Courtney. And of course, he's also on Trek FM on The Orb talking about Deep Space Nine. So before we head off, before we have the usual sign-off, what would you like to say? One last thing, Saber Goddess.
Well, you can find me nowhere because I'm not on social media, so don't try.
Okay.
Besides with your Notum to Kessel Junkie.
That's right. That's right.
But I will see you when the next movie comes out. So hear my dad's podcast so you can hear me next time.
Yeah. I think that's a great selling point, kiddo. Now, you know how we end this show. I'm going to let you have the last line, and I'm going to tee you up here. Saber Goddess, I think it's time we close negotiations.
Negotiations are closed. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.